Welcome to Talking to Grandma, a weekly podcast that elevates stories, science, and strategies to help you raise and teach multilingual and bilingual children. I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides, founder and CEO of Bilingual Generation, an organization that helps children with bilingualism in their bones stay connected to their heritage languages and cultures. I'm also a Harvard-educated doctora who has experienced losing, recovering, and passing on my heritage language to my children. Whether you are a parent, grandparent, teacher, researcher, school leader, or simply someone interested in the topics of language learning and language preservation, this podcast is for you. Through interviews with amazing guests and solo episodes, you will find the resources, guidance, and strategies needed to support you in your journey. Let's get started. Today, we hear from Zara Child, a 17-year-old student and the author of a Singaporean Hokkien language learning book. Although her first language was Mandarin Chinese, and she has formerly studied French and English, it is Singaporean Hokkien that has captured her imagination.
When I was 14, I discovered that this whole different language existed that I had never heard of before. And my parents had never talked to me about it. I didn't know it was spoken in my family. So this was a total shock to me. And I had been raised speaking Mandarin, so I really thought that was like my family's language, but it turns out it wasn't. So I eventually learned that Hokkien was not only my grandparents' mother tongue on my Singaporean family side, but also a language my mother spoke growing up.
Through her work, she strives to protect linguistic diversity. Stick around to hear Zara's inspiring story and hear about the book that she created, Jiak Ba Bei, A Taste of Singaporean Hokkien, an introduction to spoken Singaporean Hokkien. Let's get into it. Welcome to the show, Zara. We're so excited to have you here and really, really pumped to dig more into your story and more into the book, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. But we generally like to start the conversation with learning more about you and your experiences with language loss or preservation. So can you start there?
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me. So I think I really share the story that a lot of kids in the U.S. do, where you kind of grow up in a multilingual household, but then kind of as you get older and go to school, you start to lose those heritage languages. So for me, those heritage languages started off as being Mandarin Chinese and French with my Hokkien family, the Chinese with my Singaporean family. But I think that my story with language preservation gets kind of more interesting and it's more deeply rooted in my story with Hokkien. When I was 14, I discovered that this whole different language existed that I had never heard of before. And my parents had never talked to me about it. I didn't know it was spoken in my family. So this was a total shock to me. And I had been raised speaking Mandarin, so I really thought that was like my family's language, but it turns out it wasn't. So I eventually learned that Hokkien was not only my grandparents' mother tongue on my Singaporean family side, but also a language my mother spoke growing up. I remember my first thought was like, how did I not know this language existed that is spoken in my family? And so I did some research and I learned that Singaporean Hokkien and most dialects of Chinese kind of faced a history of linguistic repression in Singapore. So that's when I really started to dive into language preservation and trying to learn the language itself.
That's amazing. Can you tell us a little bit more about like how you found out at 14? Was it like by accident or were you researching it and came across? Like what brought you to that realization?
So it was at the dinner table and my mom had cracked like a joke in Hokkien over the table. And I remember thinking to myself, like, God, did my Mandarin get this bad that I didn't understand a single word? And then I asked her and she told me that it was Hokkien. And I was like, completely shocked because I had never even heard of the language.
And that kind of started it all where you then learned about it. So what did you learn about the history of linguistic oppression? Like, who were the people that spoke Hokkien and why was it a language that then started to be viewed as maybe less prestigious or less valuable as Mandarin Chinese?
Dialects of Chinese like Hokkien, there's quite a few of them. The main ones in Singapore are Hokkien, Teochew, and Cantonese. Those dialects, they're considered dialects, but they're really more their own languages, and many linguists would agree on that. They were spoken by the majority of the Chinese Singaporean population in Singapore until the Speak Mandarin campaign, which was launched in the late 70s, and it encouraged halting speaking dialects in favor of Chinese, Mandarin Chinese, and English, because they had more international power and kind of to make Singaporeans more competitive in the economy and in business. So they kind of halted speaking those languages, and they were discouraged from speaking it in schools. And there was also stopping of airing Hokkien and other dialects on radio broadcasts and television shows. And that kind of not only isolated the elderly population that spoke the language, but it also stopped new native speakers from being created. So that created a language barrier between the younger generation and the older generation, between grandparents and grandchildren, which was really sad.
Did you ever talk to your mom about this? Like, why she decided not to speak Hokkien to you, or to share more that part of her identity? And did it intersect with this history that you're sharing with us now?
Yeah. So when I first asked her about it, she told me that she really spoke it with her grandparents. And at home, because at school she was encouraged to speak Mandarin and English, she didn't really take that language home to her parents. So she spoke Mandarin with her parents, but when it came to her grandmother, who spoke Hokkien, she spoke Hokkien with her grandmother, but she was discouraged from speaking it at school, so she passed on Mandarin to me.
We here at Bilingual Generation talk a lot about like the intersection of language and identity. And I'm curious to know, like, as you learned about this language that is a part of your family, that's a part of your heritage, if that shifted your sense of identity in any way, and if so, how?
I think definitely it did, because I kind of grew up thinking that I was speaking Mandarin Chinese, and that was the only language on my Singaporean side of the family. So, I mean, that's the language that is for the most part spoken by Chinese people and Chinese Singaporeans around the globe. So when I learned of this, I really felt like I had been missing out on this piece of my identity. Like, this one piece of my culture had been slipping away from me, and I had not even realized it.
So since you've started kind of digging more into this piece of your identity, what do you feel like has changed for you, or kind of different understandings that you have about yourself and your identity?
I think I definitely am like more interested in like the history of languages in Singapore. And it kind of like has pushed me to realize how diverse languages can be. And especially in like, not just Singapore, but also in China, like there's so much language diversity that is just not spoken of and we don't really hear of. So that's something I've become more interested in, and kind of also more interested in learning all the different languages from the different parts of my family, because there's a lot of different languages spoke on both sides of my family. And I think I've kind of been more interested in learning all of those languages opposed to just the ones that are quote unquote useful, like English and French, mm-hmm. and, you know, ones that are considered kind of more useful in the business world. So I value that part of the cultural aspect of language more now.
Yeah, that's amazing. Have you gotten your family involved in kind of this journey of reclaiming, relearning your heritage languages?
Definitely, yes. I think if you asked anyone in my family, they would tell you that I'm always asking, like, can we please speak Mandarin today? Can we please speak Hokkien today? Definitely, yeah. And my mom, too, she speaks Hokkien. She spoke it as a child. So for me, anytime I had a question, I'd be bouncing to her room, like, asking her how to say something. And especially Singaporean Hokkien is kind of more unique. I mean, every, like, dialect is unique, but Hokkien is very influenced by the other languages in Singapore and, like, the Malaysian population and all of the other diverse aspects of Singapore. So there's really like a unique way Hokkien is spoken in Singapore compared to Taiwan or China. So I've been asking her about kind of the different ways that are spoken. And I think we just speak languages other than English more now that I've become interested in this?
I'm thinking about our audience who are mostly parents and also grandparents and educators of children, multilingual children, and children who, you know, they want to be multilingual. And a lot of what we hear from our folks that we work with is in the U.S., how difficult it can be to sustain a child's interest in learning another language or developing their heritage language. Maybe it's easier when they're at home and they're 3 and 4, but once they get in school and the English monolingual mainstream, and then they get to middle school and then they get to high school. And so here we have you, Zara, who's 17 years old. And from 14 to 17, you kind of jumped into this language discovery and preservation process. So what was necessary for you to have this mindset or this kind of love for learning languages? And what can educators and parents kind of take from that or learn from that?
So I think I definitely experienced that same feeling where, like, the second I went to school, I was like, I really need to only speak English. And that was the only language that I was interested in. Actually, my mom has told me that I would, like, lay on the floor and tell her I would not speak Mandarin at all. So I was pretty much trying to disconnect myself from any aspect of my linguistic heritage that was not English. So that eventually led me to lose both my understanding of French and Mandarin. So essentially, I was cut off from a lot of relationships in my family. I think something that I grew to value as I got older was being able to hear the stories from my grandparents. So when I didn't speak French, my broken French was not letting me hear any of the stories about my grandmother and her childhood in Haiti, or anything from my Singaporean grandmother, who, you know, she lives in Singapore and she has so many interesting stories. So, I mean, to this day, I've never stopped wondering what stories I could have been told. So I think kind of the language barrier is what pushed me. But I think that's something that is kind of helpful for getting your kid interested in the language, or, like, you know, gaining confidence in being able to, like, teach that language, even if you're not perfect at it, is realizing, like, how messy language learning is and how messy language preservation is. You don't have to be perfectly fluent, and your kid doesn't have to be perfectly fluent either. So even just learning one more phrase or one more word, if you think about that as kind of a step towards connection and a step towards culture, then I think that really helps.
Beautiful. I could not have said that better myself. That's so true. So thank you, Zara, for saying that. And, you know, it's so important to know that, like, connection and culture are the core of heritage language preservation, because, you know, the grammar will come, the vocabulary will come, the, you know, mastery of the mechanics of the language will come. But if you don't have the motivation, if you don't have the connection to it, or any, you know, groundedness in a why this is important, then it's very difficult for any of the other stuff, language learning stuff, to come after that. So thank you so much for sharing that. So Zara, you have a book called Jiak Ba Bei, A Taste of Singaporean Hokkien, An Introduction to Singaporean Hokkien. Can you tell us a little bit about this book and what inspired you to create it?
Yeah, of course. So I kind of think of it as a little bit of a Hokkien primer. So it's a very introductory book to spoken Singaporean Hokkien. And I say spoken because Hokkien does have written characters like Mandarin Chinese, but spoken, teaching it in a way that helps people speak, makes it easier for people who don't read characters perfectly or who aren't amazing at reading Mandarin characters, which is a very difficult task to master. So this book kind of uses a combination almost of the Mandarin romanization system, which is pinyin, and English letters, and the addition of a glottal stop to kind of intuitively teach simpler Singaporean Hokkien so that people can learn it, even though there's not a lot of formal resources for learning Hokkien.
That's amazing. So how did you come up with this method? Were you taught this method, or did you learn this method somewhere? What inspired you to use this method to write the book?
So for me, something that, because I grew up speaking Mandarin at home, but I didn't formally study it in like a school setting. So I don't have a ton of background on written Chinese characters. And Hokkien is really more of a spoken language because in Singapore, it's more of a colloquial language. So it's not formally used for any documents. And the main purpose of Hokkien is just speaking, to communicate with your grandparents or with elderly community. So I kind of recognized that it was not important to me that I would be doing the characters. And I applaud anyone out there who is trying to preserve the characters, because I could never do that. But for me, I also had to realize that a lot of Singaporean youth are not very comfortable with characters. And I can't say that for all of them, but the Singaporeans that I've met in the US don't all perfectly know characters. And an easier way to learn is with romanization. And that's the way that I was taught by my Hokkien teacher, Eugene Lee, who founded LearnDialect.sg. He taught me in that way. So I decided to just take what he taught me, which I thought was pretty intuitive, and kind of adjust it a little bit, which makes it easier for other people to learn, even if they don't perfectly read Mandarin characters, and even if they don't even know how to read romanization for Mandarin Chinese.
That's really great. And I think it's also important to elevate the fact that, like, we all have different relationships to our heritage language. And some people may be able to, you know, read and write it and have a different kind of fluency, and other people may be able to speak it more fluently. And so it's really whatever your relationship to your heritage language is better than no relationship to your heritage language. So it's really wonderful that you're providing this entry point into the Hokkien language for others who want to learn this way as well. Also have a resource on your website, which we will link in the show notes, that includes a playlist of Hokkien music. And music can be a great resource for people looking to reclaim and learn their heritage language. So was it difficult to come up with this playlist? Is there a large amount of Hokkien music out there, or was it difficult for you to compile this list?
I think that's a bit of a mix of both. Because the titles of those songs are in characters, for me, it was not super easy to distinguish whether it was Hokkien from the song titles. But when I listened to it, I could tell the difference between the languages, Mandarin and Hokkien. There is some Hokkien music, but I would say it's kind of more the music from the older generation. I haven't found pretty much any like younger Hokkien music. So I don't think there's a lot of Hokkien music being produced, but I think that music from the past is really helpful, especially because it's kind of what I heard my grandparents listening to or singing karaoke to. So I think there's a lot of culture in that generation's music. Mm-hmm. But for me, the playlist was kind of, when I was learning, I liked to hear it because it almost transported me to Singapore, made me feel like I was learning a lot too. And once I started recognizing words, that was really rewarding. So I wanted other people to be able to do that.
Yes, that's great. And hopefully maybe we have some folks listening and inspired who may start producing new generations of Hokkien music and keeping that alive. What's some advice that you would give someone who's looking to find a community or who's trying to begin the process of preserving their heritage language? Given your experience and your journey, what advice would you give them?
I think first of all, you need to come to terms with the fact that you are not going to be able to preserve an entire language by yourself. Language preservation seems like this huge, daunting task that is reserved for people who fluently speak the language and who are trained linguists and studied for numerous years. But you don't need that. And language preservation, all you really need is to tap into the elderly community, which usually is where the native speakers are, and is usually where the people who want to speak about their language are. So I'd say advice is be easy on yourself. Don't take on too much. Try to preserve an introductory level. And if that's already been done, then maybe you can take it a step further and do a different kind of subject. Start kind of slow and just tap into that elderly community, because it's kind of like a gold mine, if I'm being honest. They know the language best. And so if you listen to them, you can record them and you can kind of sound it out if there isn't any existing romanization.
I love the elevation of the wisdom of our elders and how important they are in language preservation and also cultural preservation. I'm wondering, Zara, from your time with elders in this language preservation process, what are some things that you've learned?
I've definitely learned a lot about Singapore's history. I think the history of dialects is not something that I had really heard before. It's definitely Singapore's presence in like United States history classes is definitely very minimal, if there is any representation at all. So I definitely learned a lot about the history, but also I think I learned more about kind of how people speak colloquially. So because Singapore is so diverse, a lot of different communities and languages influence Singaporean Hokkien. So I kind of learned more about how the language is spoken specifically in Singapore and how specific words are said that reflect other languages of different groups in Singapore.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Zara, for sharing that wisdom with us and just your whole journey. I'm so inspired by everything that you've done, and I hope our listeners are too. As we close out, we always like to end with the question of what is bringing you joy these days?
So much. I think seeing that there's a lot of younger people that are more interested in preserving their language or in learning their heritage languages, that really brings me joy, because I think we all came from a place, or most of us came from a place, where at first we didn't want to get into that and we didn't want to learn those heritage languages. But kind of as we grew older, we came to appreciate that kind of culture. So I think that's really amazing that so many people are starting to tap into this part of their culture. And I also, it brings me joy that there's organizations like this that are actually passionate about language preservation, because all of the hard work and consistent effort from language preservation is kind of being seen as worth it. So I think that's amazing. I think language has kind of a key to connection and diversity, and I think more people are starting to project that, and I love that.
Thank you so much, Zara. I really appreciate you again for the time, for all the work that you're doing, and for being a part of this larger movement, as you said, of language preservation. It really takes an intergenerational effort. So thank you everything that you've done and for bringing so much inspiration to the space today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to share this podcast with a friend or colleague. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your ratings and reviews help us to keep the podcast lights on. We can't do this without your support. Every subscription, share, follow, download, and review makes a big difference and helps others find our show. Also, we love hearing from you. Tell us what you think of the podcast. Email us at hello@bilingualgeneration.com. You can also slide into our DMs on Instagram at Talking to Grandma. If you are interested in learning more about our workshops and curricular tools for schools serving multilingual and emerging multilingual students, visit our website at www.bilingualgeneration.com or write us at hello@bilingualgeneration.com. Talking to Grandma is owned by Bilingual Generation. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara, and I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. See you next episode.